And let's hear for the bench coach of the San Francisco Giants, and that is the great Ron Wotus joins us. But I was telling Carl Ravitch today, I like this team. I like the way the Giants play. I like the way the guys have come up, the way they've stepped in. I like the intensity. I like the comeback ability. I like the attempts by the bullpen to get it right. And I just like the way the whole team is playing. I really do. And it shows in the standings. And as we start play today, the Giants are 56 and 33. This is 89 down. Today is the 90th game of the season. And you figure out who you are by the 90th game. But I like what I see. And I also told Carl Ravitch, and I want to get it started, Brandon Crawford for MVP.
Yes.
Brandon Crawford for MVP. And I firmly believe it. And, well, we'll start off with that. And, Pat, by the way, nice to see you.
Great
today.
To see you, Marty. And if you really wanted to show some cojones, you'd say Clayton Kershaw for MVP. Hey, I'm a Brandon Crawford fan. And that play he had yesterday where he ranged to his left and threw out Lamb at first, brilliant. You don't see anybody else in baseball making that play.
Well, what do you think? And you've been around the game for so long. You're the winningest bench coach in Major League history, which we established yesterday with Matt Duffy when he was on last night, and he got a kick out of that. But Crawford, look, you've tutored him. You've brought him up since he was a kid when I said let the kids play. And the way he's matured, but his impact on the game now, the hitting and the fielding.
Well, Marty, you're right. I mean, you can make an argument that he's definitely in a running. There's no question. And you think about an MVP and what they do, it's just not offense numbers. A lot of times it is. You know, you got the big hitter, he just pounds the ball offensively. But when you can talk about an MVP that impacts the game defensively as well, and there's been a lot of them over the years, you have to consider that. His numbers offensively are right up there RBI-wise, maybe not home runs and doubles at this point in average, but it's right up there with a lot of the sluggers in the league, you know, RBI total. And you know, I put a high mark on RBIs because I think if you're driving in runs, regardless of your average or how many home runs you hit, you're doing a heck of a job. That's the name of the game, is score runs, the drive-in runs. And then you look at his defensive impact that he has for us. And we get to see him every day. So I'm jaded, of course. I can't tell you how many games he helps us win with the glove. You know, just his consistency, always being in the right spot. And sometimes it's not noticeable by the fans because it's not a great play. But here you go, there's a ball hit somewhere, and he's standing right there, and he makes the play, and it ends up helping you win the game. So I hope he continues to play well, and I'd love to see him in the running for that.
Yeah. The bench coach, Ron Wotus, joins Marty and me here at the Public House. And, well, I just love Brandon Crawford, and I know he's kind of a quiet guy. So obviously some MVP candidates thus far include Chris Bryant in Chicago and Nolan Arenado, despite the Rockies having a sub-500 record. But tell us how Brandon Crawford's matured as a leader of this ball club.
Well, you're right, Patrick. He's matured pretty much on schedule what you want, and even more so. And when he first came up, everybody said, you know, this guy can play Major League shortstop right now. And with his youth, he tried to make every play possible, and he's been able to mature there and cut down his errors and play Gold Glove shortstop. He's a Gold Glover now, let's face it. And I think he'll be at the top of the list again this year. But offensively, we all said in development, we knew it was kind of, you know, quick getting him to the major leagues. He said, well, he's going to play great defense, and if he hits 250, you'd be happy with that. Well, you know, he's hitting above 250, but the thing that's really impressive is his RBI production. Yeah. He drives in runs. He's a clutch hitter. I wish they kept that game-winning RBI stat now. When the game's on the line and there's men on base, he rises to the occasion just like he did in that one playoff game when he hit the grand slam to give Bum that four-run lead to help us advance in the playoffs. So he's matured tremendously, and he's an elite player in the league now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I'd like to see him get national attention. And it's unfortunate, and we'll talk All-Star stuff. You guys have been there before, and thank goodness you have, because it means you won the pennant. But look, he's not an All-Star. Can you believe this? And you talk about one of the anomalies of this whole system. First of all, it's crazy that this exhibition game determines something as critical as the seventh game of a World Series and the first game of a World Series. But he's not an all-star. Can you believe this?
Yeah, it's well, you know, there's always players that you look at. You know, it's a tough process. We've been through it three times ourselves, helping Boach try to pick the players who are worthy of the all-star selections. And no matter how you shake it down, there's going to be five or six guys that are very worthy of it, and you just have no choice. You know, one thing that hurt him again, I think, this year is having to have a player from every team, yeah. Right? So when the guy got hurt in St. Louis, Carpenter, I think they had to take a player from St. Louis to represent them. Is that guy having the year Brandon Crawford is? Is he the player? No, not at this point in time, in my opinion. So, you know, he got hurt there. But it's not perfect. You know, even with the fan voting, the game's for the fan. You see guys get voted in, and there's other guys with much, much better numbers. Yeah. So that's a whole show, I think, talking about how to fix that problem. But he's certainly an all-star in our book.
All right. Ron Woda is the bench coach of the Giants with us. One last thought for you. And I had Duffy on last night. Did you get to hear him a little bit?
Yeah, I did. I was driving home. Unfortunately, I couldn't get to the Bay Bridge again. I had to go San Mateo, so I had plenty of time to listen to the show. And Matt did a great job, but his girlfriend Rachel,
she stole it.
She stole the show. Exactly right.
That's great.
Yeah, she did. She was terrific. But he brought up the play yesterday. You see so many different things at the ballpark every day. And the one that Crawford went up the middle, and he almost got blindsided by Grant Green,
right,
in the shift. And he said that was that play to Duffy. He said that was a classic play, and I don't know, it maybe didn't get a lot of publicity. But you, as a defensive coach, and setting that defense with the shift, that second baseman can get in the way of the shortstop, and it's a collision waiting to happen.
Yeah, because they're not in those positions very often, you know, where the shortstop is so far up the middle or on the second base side, and the second baseman's going at it. Now, you know, you're used to being the third baseman and shortstop have to communicate for a ball, or the first baseman and the second baseman, but very seldom is it the shortstop and second baseman. Sometimes when the balls hit up the middle and they're converging, but it's a different angle play, and that's what happens in those shifts. And, you know, I have to give Craw a lot of credit because, you know, they had two lefties on the mound, facing left-handed hitters, and, you know, people that are anti-shift, they say, well, you know, a lefty's going to stay on the ball, and you can't shift on him. You know, and Craw did, especially with Osich, because he was dead pull right behind second, because it's much easier to move to your left. If a ball's hit to Craw's left, he can go to the second base by and make the play, but once you go to the second base side and it's hit to the shortstop side, it's very difficult to go that way and backhand and make that play. But, you know, he stuck his neck out there and felt to be on the second base side with Osich, and he ranged far to his left and made a heck of a play. That saved the run and the inning from continuing on. So another big play for him.
And he avoided Green.
Yeah.
Come on. That to me, that was the play. I thought Green was going to knock him down, and here comes, you know, Mercury Morris around the end, you know?
You're right.
I mean, that was the play for me.
Yeah.
How about Javi Lopez leaving the dugout yesterday? How'd you like that one?
I didn't get to. I was just got into the clubhouse, and Bill Hayes was looking on YouTube or something, looking at the highlights. So I know he wanted to see that. I'm gonna have to go when I go in. I'm gonna have to take a look at it. I heard it described, and I thought he did it. He fell very, very eloquently and handled it well. I heard.
Well, he threw up the white flag. I guess in that position where you trip coming out of the dugout, you have two choices: one, to pretend like it didn't happen, or two, just to roll with it. And Javier did. And I'd ask you, Woe, is that there was a lot of weird stuff at yesterday's game. It was hilarious just to watch the telecast. There was a woman in the crowd that had a foul ball splash all her beer and cover the entire section. How about the ball thrown back from Posey to Peavy that bounced right into his glove? Jake Lamb dropping one in the sun. It was a very strange game. Did you guys sense that from the dugout?
You know, I didn't. But when Javi went down, that's a signal that something's awry, because that doesn't happen to Javi, and he made a good decision on the way he handled that. But, you know, we used to have a guy in the minor leagues. He's a major league player, Mario Mendoza, right? Famous
Mendoza
for the Mendoza line.
Line.
He used to like to fall on purpose. So when you were introduced, if it was a big game and they introduced the lineups and you'd go jogging out to the line, he'd get halfway out there, trip and fall on his face, you know, to get a laugh from his teammates and listen to the crowd go, ooh.
Yeah.
But I don't think Javi did it on purpose.
No, he just laid out.
Yeah, it was great.
He did the snow angel thing. You know, he did that. It was pretty funny. It was pretty funny. Dennis Eckersley. And I think it was during Frank Robinson's first game when he was the manager of the Indians. And they introduced Dennis Eckersley, and he came out of the dugout, you know, with the spikes. He slipped and just took a header right out of the dugout. That's the most famous one that I ever saw.
You remember?
Yeah, that Eckersley did that. I'll never forget that. Duffy was on yesterday, talked a lot about baseball, and I'm starting to call him the student.
For good reason. I listened, like I said, I had to go San Mateo Bridge over to East Bay, so it was about an hour ride. I was impressed how articulate he was and how well he explained, you know, the nuances of the position and what goes through his mind. I thought he painted a great picture, which you want to do on radio. Yeah. I've learned from you.
Yeah.
And I was impressed with his ability to talk about the game.
Yeah, I was. And he brought up a couple of things. One, the pop flies and how to handle that. And I thought that was interesting. How do you teach that? Because everyone who comes in here, whether it's a center fielder coming in for a ball, the second baseman going back, the catcher, third base, whatever it is on these pop flies, and what he said was there's a moment when the crowd senses it, and he said that's, the player knows that he may be in trouble. How do you teach that? Because you guys, knock wood, seem to be able to catch those pop-ups.
Well, a couple of things to start. One is, you don't want to have the sunglasses on top of the hat. You want to have them over your eyes. And we've seen that many, many times in the major leagues. Yeah. A guy's out there without sunglasses, or they have sunglasses and they're on the hat and they're not using them. And it's different today because we always had the flip downs.
Yeah.
And, you know, you would wear those in practice in spring training to learn when to flip the glasses down. So it was a little bit different. Now guys wear the Oakleys and the sunglasses the whole time. So they have the sun blocked. But, you know, the other thing that you always have to be aware, and I talked to Tejada after it happened with Lamb. I said, do you have a sign with Craw? Have you talked to him about to let him know when you're in trouble? And that's the thing. You know, you have to converge as infielders, and you have to communicate. If that sun and the angle that you're going at the ball is that bad, you have to let the other infielder know, because he'll have a better angle at it most of the time, and he can take those. So that's the number one thing, being prepared before it happens. And then the other side of it is, you know, you could try to get to the other side of the ball,
yes,
which is very difficult to do because you're having a hard time seeing it to begin with. But that's what they're taught mostly in the outfield,
yes,
is to get a different vantage point on it. And it's, you know, it takes some practice. So it's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, Dwayne Murphy, remember the center fielder, great
A's,
gold
yeah.
glove center fielder. That's exactly what he told me. I said, how do you catch these balls? Because he would never miss. He says, I go to the side. I turn to the side.
Right.
And that's exactly what he said. I always remembered that. The other thing Duffy said is, you know, yell for help.
Yeah.
And you better yell loud because the crowd is starting to sense it and, they, you know, your teammate may not hear it.
Right. No, that's why you have to communicate, and everybody has to know that, you know, it's a tough sun feel. If I'm Duff, I'm saying to Craw, hey, this pop-up, this is I got a tough sun over here, so keep an eye on me, you know. And you do that all over the field because, and then, of course, you want to do it with your outfielders, you know. A new, say, Pena's playing second and Williamson's in right. You want to make sure that they communicate. We do the drills in spring training and all that, but there's no substitute for you going to the outfielder and working out your particular communication that you like to use. You want them to say something, do you not want them to say something? And when two individuals work it out like that, you usually have less confusion than if you don't talk.
Ron Motis with Marty and Pat Connor here at the Public House, and I'm going to ask you, for guys that have their sunglasses on the back of their hats when they go out, do you have a kangaroo court for something like that? And also, while you're answering that, I'm going to show you Javier Lopez yesterday.
For the record,
full roll.
For the record,
but
for the record, Pat has shown him the YouTube video.
Yeah, what do you think of that?
Well, he went down harder than I thought he did. And, you know, the kangaroo court question, we used to do that years ago, but it's pretty much non-existent today. I think the Phillies are using it a little bit.
Okay.
The manager's using it over there, but that would be one common thing that would come up in court. Yeah, I miss a pop-up and no sunglasses or the sunglasses are on your hat. So, yeah, I've seen it before.
Yeah, okay. Giants ever do anything like that since you've been here, you know, that sort of kangaroo courtish kind of thing?
Yeah, we have.
How do you do it?
There's been several years. Usually you pick... You know, you pick your judge and your jury. You have one guy in charge, and it's usually, you know, the guy with the most experience or the guy that wants to do it as well. Well, we haven't done it in years here, but I remember probably the last time we did it when Aubrey Huff was here.
Really?
I remember him.
He's the judge?
Him being one of the judges. Usually there's three guys up there, and they vote. And you go by experience. You're not going to have some rookie up there voting on the guys. So you take the most veteran guys that like do it, and they speak. And you know what the judge rules? It's over with, right? There's no arguments. Because if you argue, the fine is double. So if you want to argue and try to get off, your fine is double if they still give you the thumbs down.
And we saw Aubrey at the parade, so I'd imagine where he kept his gavel, right?
Yeah. He's actually good at those types of things, being the judge and jury of policing the baseball clubhouse.
Good.
Yeah, and, you know, we've done it in the fantasy camp when I've been involved with the A's and the Mariners and the Giants. And, you know, it was a lot of fun to do it. And they bring up everything, anything that could happen. And it's not just plays on the field if you're not dressed properly and all. Is that the big leaguers do that, too?
Yeah, you know, that's where you've had a lot of players over the years get upset. I think when it was first introduced, it was to try to get guys to play the game right on the field. You know, I think that's where some of the coaches and managers tried to institute this kangaroo court, and I think that's what Pete McCannon and the Phillies were doing. You know, if you don't get a guy over, you don't get the guy in from third, you know, a two-out walk. You know, things on the field to emphasize how important it is to play the game right. But invariably what happens is guys start going after one another. And they don't like the way you dress. They didn't like the shirt you had on, so they get you for embarrassing the club.
Yes.
And then they start branching out from there. And you can imagine how ugly it gets in the clubhouse.
Yeah. Very funny. All right. We'll take a break. Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the Giants, with us. Well, we'll come back. I want to talk. You managed the other night, you know, which is always interesting. We've had these discussions before because, as Duffy and I talked about, you can't prepare for it. I mean, all of a sudden, 10 seconds you're doing one thing, and 10 seconds later you're running the whole game. So I want to talk about that. And also maybe your favorite All-Star moments. You've been through a few of these, and because people are heading down there and it's a whirlwind. But let's get you some of your favorite moments from the All-Star game. All right, more coming up right here in the Sports Loop.
Now back to the patio of the Public House for Weekends in the Park. Here's Marty, Lurie, and Pecan on KNBR 680.
All right, we've got baseball today. The Giants try to sweep the Diamondbacks and head into game 90 here with a chance here to go 57-33. And I just say the numbers. It's just incredible. Well, last Friday night, you got to be a manager. And all of a sudden it happened. Bochy is gone. Bring us up to date on how that thing went down. Segura gets hit. Now Corbin is throwing at Posey and the benches. I know it's baseball, but here we go.
Yeah, well, you know, Segura, we had no intention of hitting him, but looking at the history, I guess the previous 2 days, Segura got hit a couple times. So from their perspective, you know, they were getting tired of it. Now, it wasn't intentional. And Segura's a guy you have to pitch inside. He's going to get hit. He dives out there. You have to pitch him inside. So it was innocent enough. We hit him. No big deal. But now the very next inning, you know, Posey comes up. And here they go. They throw a ball at him. And, of course, the pitcher misses him. Corbin misses him. Well, okay, you know what the intent is there, right? It's payback time. Well, he does it again and throws it behind him. So the umpire throws, didn't throw anybody out.
Warns.
He gives warnings, and that's where Boch was livid, and we all were, and rightfully so. If you don't have good enough judgment to know that wasn't intentional, and you should have thrown the pitcher out immediately for throwing at Buster. He tried to hit him twice, but you know, a lot of times they take the easy way out, which is we'll warn both teams and put a stop to it. But it says in the rule book, if you feel it's intentional, I think looking at that scenario, everybody in the ballpark knew that that was intentional at that point. And that's why Boach took exception to it. That's Buster Posey to throw in at the very next inning. And the umpire, we felt, didn't do the right thing. He warned both of us, and their pitcher should have been ejected.
And then you're the manager. So the question is, how do you get prepared for something like that? I mean, I know you know the game and what's happening, but once you're looking out there and moving infielders around, the next time you're running the game.
Yeah, well, the mechanics of it is different. I mean, I've been doing this a long, long time. I managed in the minor leagues. I've been here coming up on 20 years now as a bench coach. But you're right. My responsibilities are a little bit different. I communicate with Boach. I got my field responsibilities with the infielders. But now you're asked to manage the game. And the biggest difference is dealing with the pitching and now communicating with Rags and the mechanics of that, getting guys up. And, you know, the biggest thing is you have the final say. As a bench coach, you know, I'm going to give my opinion, and Boach has the final say. So that changes things quite a bit. So you all of a sudden, you know, the infield defense and these things aren't as important. And really your whole mind is on the pitching and the moves you're going to make. Because a pinch hitting decisions there are pretty basic. But how do you want to line up the pitching with the bullpen? You know, who are the guys that you don't want to let beat you? And in their lineup, it's Goldschmidt and Lamb. So it changes quite a bit, and now you're thrust into dealing with that, which you don't deal with on a daily basis. So it comes back quick, but the mechanics of it all, you're not as polished as you'd like to be.
Yeah, you see something different every night at the ballpark, and that was that night all of a sudden that happened. All right, let's turn our attention to the All-Star game. You've been down there a few times already, obviously, with Dusty as well as with Bochy, and the whole staff has been there. Good moments for you, All-Star moments. What do you like about it?
Well, you know, you think about it. Anytime you go, it's a lot of fun to see the best players in the league, and I really enjoy having the opportunity to talk with the other guys. You know, even guys, you know, say he's a Dodger or somebody that, you know, you're trying to beat all the time. Tulowitzki was a guy that I really enjoyed having an opportunity to talk to him and talk about infield play and get to know him. And, you know, it really does change your perspective.
Yeah.
You're here with the Giants. You're always trying to beat, and you know, you want to get these guys out. So it's a great opportunity to find out what makes them tick, get to know the person opposed to just competing against them. But, you know, actual moments in the game, I guess I'd have to go back to, you know, the first the All-Star game in Arizona, the one that we won.
That's right.
And I think it was Prince Fielder. He hit a two-run home run, or did he hit the ball in the gap? I can't remember. He drove in a couple and gave us the lead. And, you know, everybody was excited. We went on and won the game. So, you know, it was great to see the guys excited in the dugout to take the lead there.
I tried to explain to Duffy last night that there was a time in the All-Star game when the league presidents would come in and make an impassioned speech. I mean, this was the National League. And look, you were a Pirate for many years. You know, the National League versus the American League was a big deal. I still call Eddie Montague a National League umpire. Any of that ever go on in modern times, let's say? Anyone, you know, come in and say, all right, we want to beat these guys?
Yeah, well, the managers do go and talk to the club. First of all, you want to congratulate them all. So there's always a meeting. Boach always had a meeting with the club before and congratulate guys. And then, of course, you'd want to talk about the game. You know, give them a little insight on how important the game is. You are playing for home field advantage, and you point that out to the players. And then you want to let them know that it's not an exhibition. This game counts. So we're going to play to win, and we're going to try to get everybody in the game, but we're going to play the game to win, because when it's an exhibition, it's a totally different feel. It's a different atmosphere. So I don't think it's at the same level that it was years ago, but it's certainly an important thing for the managers to address and to remind the players how important it is to win the game.
What about for a game like today? Is it hard to keep your focus knowing that after grinding for 90 games, it's hard to stay focused on today's action?
Well, you know, it may be for some people. You know, everybody's different, but I always likened it to the last game of the season. You know, the reality of what we do, we've all done this so long, and this is what we do for a living. And when usually, you know, it's a long season. If you're not in the playoffs, you can't wait for the last game to be over with. But then you get home for 2 weeks, what do? You start working out. You wish you were back playing baseball again. So you got to keep that in perspective. These guys are professionals. They know how important it is to win today. We got bum on the mound. Yep. We want to win this last game, but guys are anxious. It is a grind for them and their families, and now they have an opportunity to go with their families and spend a few days with the kids and have a normal life for 3 days. It doesn't happen. This is their only opportunity. Right. So they're looking forward to it.
I know you got to go hit some infield here. Work on the double play because the rules still, I don't understand them. Yeah. Jason Wirth the other night called out, and the umpires said before he got slid, he said, you can do this or that. Then they called him out. Mike Rizzo went down and got into it with Jim Joyce. They almost got into a fight about it, the general manager of the Nationals. You and I have talked these rules all year long. The second base rule being clarified in any way now? I mean, it looked to me like he had to hold on to the bag, so to speak.
Well, not for me. I mean, and it happened to us the other night. There was a challengeable play. The infielder slid past the base. But quite frankly, honestly, we don't know what they're going to call. Yeah. It's a flip of the coin if they're going to call at a double play. We see guys going beyond the base that can't hold on to the base, make no attempt, and they don't call the double play, and then sometimes they do. So honestly, it needs to be looked at. And this is our biggest nightmare. Myself, Chad Chopp, Sean Dunstan. In that video room, and it's a flip of the coin, and that is not good. We're talking about the rules of the game, and it's not clarified well enough for us. We don't know the judgment involved, and we see it called every which way. So it's a difficult decision for us.
Yeah, and you can't. Well, I guess in this one, the umpires on the field kind of misled Wirth, and that's why Rizzo got into it, but. You know, once the call is made in New York, you're yelling at the Western Union messenger. You know?
Right.
And so you can't really do much about it. But to get to that point, that's the issue.
Well, that's the issue. But, you know, even you got different judgments involved. You got the umpire on the field who can call it right away, which we had it called against us right away in Arizona. And then a similar play, we don't get it called with a different umpire. So you have that judgment. So you hope the umpire on the field gets it right because, as you're saying, Marty, once they don't, now you challenge it, it goes to a different umpire and their judgment. And let's face it, these guys are humans, and they're all judging these things a little bit different.
Yeah, boy, you're right. All right, one last thing. We'll let you get out of here. Johnny Cueto. Now, I know that I don't think they've announced anything as a starting pitcher, but I look at the numbers. I look just the. I like this team. I'm telling you, I like the way they play. I like what he does and Samardzija. Just the whole thing. Albert Suarez. It's 25 stories. You're getting the team's coming together. But Cueto may be the biggest story of the year. 13-1. He's doing stuff that Marichal did and Perry. And I don't think anyone in the league comes close to the guy. I mean, I would hope he starts the game.
Yeah, no, I hope so as well. I mean, he certainly deserves it. And as always, there's two or three guys that you're going to have that argument about. But watching him and what he's done for us and how much he enjoys it, I don't believe he's ever started an All-Star game. I hope he gets the opportunity because I'm sure he would really embrace that and want to do it. And he's been nothing but spectacular for us. And very deserving.
Can you imagine him starting? What he'll do? I mean, here comes the quick pitch,
Shimmy.
He'll do the shimmy, the twist. He'll take the hat off. He'll go. The guy has he has class. There's something to him when he's on the mound. It's his mound. I like that.
Yeah, no, he's in control of the game.
Right?
He's in control of the game. He controls the hitters, quite frankly. You know, he's a true pitcher in the sense that he keeps hitters off balance. And very few times is he going to give in to the hitter and let the hitter dictate the at-bat. He controls the at-bat for the hitter with his ability to locate. And then you throw in his flair and his style. And I heard on your show, he's a fan favorite. People love watching him pitch.
Yeah.
Besides the great talent and how well he is, but the personality, and he's fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah. The other guy I like is Belt. I like what Belt's doing. I do. He's got a good personality. He won 10 million votes all over the country. He should run for something. He should run against Javi for some political office. It would be an interesting combination there, the two of them. But Belt is going, and I like it.
I'm happy for Brandon Belt. He's come a long way as well, you know. From the Showtime show when he broke in with us, right? Remember?
He's crying, come on.
Right? He had him on TV getting sent out and making the team, then getting sent out. So we've all been able to watch him grow. You talk about the maturity of Brandon Crawford. Brandon Belt's another one of our own that here he's an all-star. I'm happy. He works extremely hard. He wants to be a good player, and he's put together a tremendous first half. He stayed healthy, right?
Yep.
He stayed healthy. And, you know, the other thing besides him, I just want to point out, because you said it at the beginning of the day here, but you said 25 stories. This is turning into 32 or 33 stories because all the guys that have come up to help out since all these injuries are really helping the club. Yeah. I mean, they're holding their own. They're doing the job. And, you know, we haven't lost a beat. So that's great to see.
39-15 since May 11th. So whatever happens today, you got to feel pretty good going on this little break.
No question. We're happy where we're at. You know, I think Bobby and his staff did a great job of trying to increase our depth. That was a big thing that they wanted to do this winter. They have, with players that we can pull from AAA that can come up here and contribute. And they keep doing the job, and hopefully we'll get our regulars back soon.
So far, so good, as I like to say. That's baseball. You don't want to be in Chicago right now with the Cubs. You don't want to be around Terry Collins right now with the Mets.
No.
Washington, who knows what's going on. And if you're in Los Angeles and you're in the bullpen, you're probably trying to take a rest as much as you can because they go four innings a night now. So second half coming up. There's more to the story. Who knows what's going to happen. But an A-plus, I think, for the first half.
No doubt.
Very good. We feel the same way. We couldn't be happier where we're at. We just have to continue to play this one today and enjoy the break and then get back after it in the second half.
All right, well, thanks so much. That's the bench coach of the Giants, Ron Wotus. Very good. All right, well, take care. All right, more coming up on the Sports Leader.